and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are on your wireless in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it was a disappointing end to what was a great performance at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium on Saturday. It was a game that the neutrals were saying was fantastic. Unfortunately for us, we're far from neutral. And Brennan Johnson's last-minute winner was an absolute kick in the unmentionables. But we move on. And we move on with an African Cup of Nations winner back in the squad after Simon Adingra's man-of-the-match performance helped the Cote d'Ivoire lift the trophy. And next season, he will be joined at the club by another product of the Right to Dream Academy, with Ibrahim Osman joining us, who is joined from Nordsjælland in Denmark. Also this week, the squad will meet Valentin Barco for the first time, fresh from helping Argentina qualify for the Olympics. And this weekend, we head back to the venue of our recent FA Cup win, Bramall Lane, to face Sheffield United. We hope to repeat the same result. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares. And we welcome back Marcus Hancock. And we're also delighted to be joined by an African football expert, Rahman Osman from the London World and also from the Made in Africa podcast. Welcome along, Rahman. Lovely to see you. Thank you for joining us all the way from Greece.
Lovely to actually join you guys, and I'm privileged to be on your podcast.
No, thank you for coming on. Listen, I think we've got to kick off the show with our latest superhero. I mean, this time last year, we were celebrating the achievements of Alexis McAllister, and now when he rejoins the squad, I mean, don't get me wrong, Valentin Barco's efforts are very, very notable, but Simon Adingra has grown into the African Cup of Nations tournament this time around, and we welcome him back as a hero. But there's quite a story. So, we've seen him play for sort of a good half a season, but there's quite a backstory to him, isn't there?
Well, there's a lot of backstories to him. There's a story of leaving home quite early. So he's Ivorian, but grew up partly in Ivory Coast and in Ghana, and he started football quite early. He joined an academy called Right to Dream. The same academy, it's actually like a factory of producing some of the best players from West Africa at the moment. They keep churning out the best players. Mohamed Kudus at West Ham came from that academy. Kamal Deed Suleimana of Southampton came from that particular academy. And the Osman guy who is now coming into Brighton also is Ghanaian. He's coming from Brighton Dream Academy in September. A British guy called Tom Fennell, and he visited Ghana just once. And I think one day he was walking across the capital and he saw a group of young players playing. And instantly hit him. It landed on him that Ghana's got a lot of talent, but we didn't have a chain of how to be able to actually turn these talents into top stars in Europe and America. He set up Right to Dream some years back. And now, even it's not seven only Ghana, seven the entire West Africa chain. That's where Simon Adingra came. And then his journey has been straightforward. From Right to Dream Academy with Nordsjælland. And it's funny, I spoke to Johan Juru, who used to play at Arsenal a couple of years ago. And when he was winding up his career, he went to Nordsjælland to play. And it was just at the same time Simon Adingra went to Nordsjælland to try to start his career. And it wasn't easy. When in Norway, the food was different, the weather was different, the loneliness. There's a lot of loneliness the young footballers go through when they leave home to try and make a career. You know, he was incredibly lonely. Didn't understand a lot of the language because it's French. And Johan speaks and tells, he told me a story about in his first few months, he played for the first team and then broke his ankle. And he was absolutely devastated. For him, he felt his whole world had come to an end. This was a young man who had played so well in Right to Dream, got a chance to go to Nordsjælland. And then when he was just about taking off in the first team, at this breaking ankle. But Johan says he had a chat with him and he said, listen, I've seen a lot of football and I've seen a lot of you and I think you will go all the way. Injuries are part of the game. So don't jump at it and go what it takes to make it to the high level. I've played at Arsenal, played in the Premier League, and I'm now here in Deutschland playing with you. I think he will go that far. Yeah. When he said this, And to me, and now that he's an African champion, it really does come back to me. And like, well, this journey, a lot of people might not know, even before arriving in Brighton, he had to overcome a lot of challenges.
Yeah, I mean, one of them, I mean, we're just, the story broke about him today, which is just incredible, really. I mean, he left Abobo to go to an academy in Benin. His dad, who's no longer with us, had to pay the equivalent of £300 to this so called football coach to get these, and he took these kids at 12 years old over to Benin, and it turns out it was a complete con, and these kids at 12 years old were left high and dry on the streets of Benin. It's incredible. I mean, they had to live on the streets pretty much, didn't they?
About them. It's the story of West Africa and the story of how the football business works there, especially for young kids. If you go to anywhere in West Africa, the Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Senegal, Mali, the dream is to become the next Yves Bissouma, Yaya Toure, Mikel Obi. Oh, that's only the dream. Now, what that also means is that a lot of these young players are vulnerable to so-called club men, second men, football agents who promise them all the big things. And Simon Adda, like I said, his brave move was true, just landing in the right to dream. And that's it. Before even getting that, I mean, at the age of 12, a lot of the time, his parents wanted him, that like right face, wanted him to concentrate on education. Because that has more security. That has a more structured path to success. But football is mighty big if you make it. And he was quite determined. Again, he's quite tiny, but he's massive. In character, he stepped on a lot of setbacks, and it doesn't bog him down or keep it down. So if you study his story, like rightly mentioned about being left on the streets at a very young, that will bring a lot of people's resolve. But it's not great that made him stronger. And that story is for those same. Even from right to the culture, like, even his start to life in Brighton, it's not been swashbuckling up. There's been challenges as he's been in and out of the team. But one thing is certain, you can see that he's brave and he's willing. And sometimes when you have that added to the skill, and you go places.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I'm going to say is that when we've seen Simon Adingra play, and, you know, he really did arrive on the scene, and he's probably his best moments for Brighton so far have been in European matches. But one thing that comes across is he does seem to play with a smile on his face. And I'm thinking This is someone who's realised that maybe, I mean, his career can always progress, but this is someone who's living his dream. So, I mean, if you take that back a couple of stages, you've mentioned the Right to Dream Academy. Tell us about that and what sets it apart that makes so many European clubs interested in it.
So a lot of the clubs, a lot of the academies in Africa don't have a conveyor belt, so there's no true channel to Europe. What Tim Brennan has done well is create that channel to Europe. So what he does is that he gets the talent at a very young age, but there's a chain to go to not mainland Europe, but in right to which is Nordjylland. You understand? So once they land in Europe and they play, then it's easy to sell them to other European clubs, not necessarily maybe top tier European clubs with places like Mets, Ajax, Dortmund, Brighton. So the player now, why the academy is quite really attractive to young players is that there's a channel to get into Europe, mm-hmm. which is like had been quite unlikely before he came. Because before he came, the channel used to be, you're good, you're young, and then you have to play under 17 or try to represent your country at a junior level. And then guess a national stadium, maybe a club will take a chance on you. So that's quite really.
So, I mean, this all sounds like quite familiar, Al, actually, doesn't it? I mean, I know that this is Lee Kwamu is a chap you've spoken to on the Made in Africa pod. And this is it's a similar sort of guy to Tom Vernon in the fact that he created this pathway for Enoch Mwepu and the other fella, Daka. Leicester.
Daka. Hudson Daka, yeah.
Daka. and that he created a pathway for them to get to Europe. And like Tom Vernon, he's created the right to dream. I mean, Tom Vernon, he was a former, he was the chief scout at Man United, and he actually set up this academy, and it's starting to bear fruit now, isn't it?
Lovely. I mean, it's lovely. Now, I think, and I need to give credit to writers Carlton also. I mean, players like Amit Wentworth, players like Simon and even Osman coming in. It takes people with good insight to be able to connect and meet these kind of academies at an age where they can make value of players like them at a young age, give them a platform. Because what they've done and what Simon and Dinkra particularly has done well is that because of his outstanding performance in the AFCON, it's opened Brighton to a different kind of audience that it would actually not have. Because if you go to the Ivory Coast now, I'll tell you the number of Brighton jerseys you will see.
How many of them will be real ones?
Anymore, yeah. When Michael Essien played at Chelsea, or when Didier Drogba played at Chelsea, that gave Chelsea a certain breakthrough to the African market in a way they never had.
Yeah.
Only in Africa, we support where our players play. Like what Tottenham have with Song Heung-min. So Tottenham have a huge South Korean and Asian market because of the exploit of somebody like Song Heung-min. Now, following what's happened with Simon Adingra, I tell you, people are going to be paying to watch Brighton games because they want to see how his program looks. Because he's definitely a jewel for his country at the moment. And that's why I'm saying that people like Tony Bloom and Brighton have, with the long-term future of opening Brighton to a bigger audience and bigger markets and making the club a global attraction. That's where it works for clubs like that.
Brilliant. I mean, that sounds absolutely... I mean, we've got similar stories with Ecuador, I guess, and Japan to a certain extent, absolutely. But let's focus on the tournament that's just passed there. I mean, because one, Adingra didn't really start the tournament. He was a little bit of a sick note before he started. And he got into the tournament as it progressed. And I think that, I don't think that necessarily one is specifically down to the other, but Ivory Coast's progression seemed to be in parallel with Adingra's progression. But tell us how African football correspondents and how African football generally is responding in the immediate sort of 2 days since the final to both Cote d'Ivoire's victory and because it's a Brighton podcast, to Simon Adingra's work rate. Tell us where African football is looking at these guys.
Absolutely, especially Simon Adingra. In so many ways, he's known now. For those of us who follow football and progression of young players, we already known him. But there were people who didn't graduate in the like, oh yeah, Simon Adingra. Now they know it. So it's not, that's why when you excel in a major tournament like this, your name registered in the mind of PR as the best young player or that particular. Now, in the last 48 hours since the trial, it's been absolute maniac in the Ivory Coast. The president has given them houses. It's like this. You're just showered with all the great things. And it was beautiful. And again, I spoke to a Nigerian journalist. And just back to Brighton again. They saw the video Brighton put out. All the players literally congratulated Simon.
Yeah.
His confidence, literally. His own teammates at club level have acknowledged how well it was. That shows the players. And his country also understand that he's loved by his club. So in those 2 weeks, he's absolutely on cloud nine at the moment.
Brilliant. You wait to see what happens when he walks back into the training ground.
Well, I'd like to think that the club would actually honour him in the way that, I mean, obviously you've got the World Cup is the ultimate prize, but you know, to win your continent's main football tournament, national football tournament is, like I say, one, a hell of an achievement. And like Alexis McAllister, you know, what a Brighton player, was a star of the show. So, you know, it's like I say, it seems to be at the moment is win-win for everyone, isn't it, Rahman?
Yes, he just didn't win it as a member of a winning team. He was a significant part of the winning team.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Amphos were a man down. And he came on and scored a late, late, late goal to force it out. So he literally, you can't speak about Ivory Coast success without the game Simon Adegra. I think that 100% in one of
I
those
mean,
said that his indignation, Simon, and that Simon understands his strength and uses his strength quite well to help him.
but I mean, Raman, it could have been so difficult because Ivory Coast very nearly went out of the tournament the first time of asking. And actually, the fact that they didn't win the group as expected, it probably did them a big favour because they actually meant they were able to take the, because obviously the competition was played in the Ivory Coast, and it actually meant that they could move around and play at other stadiums in the country, which they wouldn't necessarily have done ordinarily, and that's probably was a massive thing for them, wasn't it?
Was beautiful, and I kind of feel like Ivory Coast played two tournaments in the AFCON. So the Ivorian team that played in the group stage was a totally different team. I mean, the players were the same, but the attitude and spirit of the team that played in the knockout stages, for me, it felt like a totally different tournament there. Because how do you go absolutely destroy 4-0 at home to Equatorial Guinea? Fire your manager. Actually, they became the first country.
Exactly. They sacked their manager halfway through the tournament. I mean,
So they went for just sacking your manager mid-tournament. It's never, I'm not, okay, maybe you guys have correct me, but I've never seen in a major tournament where you sack your manager mid-tournament. I've seen managers sack before the tournament. I've seen managers sack after the tournament.
but not mid-tournament, no. Well, Chris Hume was sacked during the tournament as well.
Chris, when God has got let go, but Ivory Coast still had a good chance of making it, and they fired their manager. But that was a turning point. And again, you mentioned on Edinburgh, I feel like Edinburgh was, he came into the competition with a few injuries. But once he began to feel healthy, the team also began to actually feel stronger. He and Sebastian Hamme, they really did change the environment. They changed the way.
In your opinion, did Ivory Coast improve because of Adingra, or was it just a coincidence?
So, in my opinion, a lot of things came together for the Ivory Coast. Adingra's significance, the fact that they had already died in the group stage and were given a second chance, that also meant that they played without fear because they would have been out of the competition already. If countries like Ghana or Morocco had not wasted their chance. And then Sebastian Haley. So when Haley wasn't around, they didn't play with a recognized striker. Because the striker in Sebastian Haley was good at heading the ball, that brought the best out of someone like Adingra because Adingra was quick and he could take on his man and set net. That all those combinations came together to make the Ivory Coast a massive success.
I mean, I think that's the other side of the story here. I mean, obviously, we're here to talk about Brighton, but I mean, the story of Sebastien Haller, and actually his return to fitness during halfway through this tournament as well was a massive part of them getting themselves over the line. Because I mean, listen, I watched a few of these games and they weren't very good. I mean, the game against Senegal, I mean, that's 2 hours of my life I'm not going to get back.
It
But
wasn't great, was it?
it was, and you know, and there were a couple of minutes of going out of the tournament there, and it was like, but you know, but like,
Can I bring Marcus in on this, actually, AD? Because I've got to say this point before Raman goes, and I want Marcus to offer an opinion here. Given what Raman said a few minutes ago about how now there'll be a huge amount of more interest in from Côte d'Ivoire in Brighton and Hove Albion, how does that make you feel that maybe we've gained a few Côte d'Ivoirians who hitherto would have been supporting Chelsea?
Oh, brilliant! Absolutely brilliant. I mean, the more Albion, the better. I mean, I know me and Matthew and Brett spread the word in Kenya when we visited there many years ago, and spread out some REMF Brighton shirts and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, you know, bollocks to Chelsea, basically. come and support the Albion, you know. And
well, this is it. I mean, do you actually see Rahman, the whole sort of nation getting behind Brighton, or is there still going to be a loyalty towards, you know, Chelsea and other clubs?
Chelsea Brighton is literally a combination of how well the African players performed there and the success that came along with it. The success has a lot of fair weather people that followed. Part of that was also because of the successful nature of the African. I can guarantee you will have a lot of involvement, but it takes interest in Brighton games that initially they wouldn't. But because of Simon and how they funded it, you see, football in Africa, it's an escape to all the challenges the continent has.
With you, yeah.
And in come on, instant, many call, if you can help them with that, listen, the whole world's were broke. It's a great look. If you see the pictures, the whole Abidjan was on a move and nothing wanted. That kind of thing, it ends players in the heart of fans. And that's why I am certain that a lot of performance will take, especially with Simon, even for a lot of his career ahead of him. And if you send him when he is the man, if he's able to reach his potential, he's going to be a lot of a player. He is really good. The potential is up there. If there are a lot of things he needs to add to his game, especially in the Premier League, he's able to become a massive star. But he's proven in a big continental competition, watch all over the world, that he's more than capable of being the star of the show. And the more he progresses, the more the brand also progresses. So I genuinely think that these are some of the things marketing people working on marketing. And I think right about cashing it on it, look at the comments on their social media posts with Christian, they are really taking advantage of what Simon has done to be able to market the club and spread its marketing across.
Okay. Hi, Rahman. Okay, well, we've got Ibrahim Osman coming in. He's trodden the similar path to Simon, obviously from the Right to Dream Academy over to Norgeland. And now coming to Brighton in the summer. What can you tell us about him?
Another player that you should really, really look at is the talent is absolutely top notch. Brighton did a really good job to snap him from West Ham. West Ham also wanted him, but really to pay a lot of money for him. So he's one player that comes in and the potential, the speed, the ball, with progressive the ball, and can play. So he's one of those players that deserve him. Or to get the best out of him, we would have found another player. And I think that Brighton is the best player. If he had gone to West Ham, I'd have been so sure. Because, man, if you have a chance to play after David Moyes, he said all the game day.
You get the feeling that Rahman really likes Roberto Di Zerbi.
Well, I know who he is. Because basically, in Rahman's day job, I mean, he has to, unfortunately for him, he has to cover Chelsea, Spurs and Crystal Palace.
That is probably one of the worst jobs in football, isn't it? Talking about those three. I mean, one without swearing. Two. I mean, what do you do to cheer yourself up? What do you do? Headbutt the wall or something? Well, thank God, Rahman, that you're actually on the podcast of superstars. Okay,
Brian, I love Brian because when I first moved to the UK and I was a student at University of West End, but Chris Newton was a manager on Brian, and yet that just worked right and up because me and Chris were very close. I mean, he used to give me access to Brighton, so I literally did my university thesis on Brighton from nowhere to the Premier League. So I did some Brighton check.
Fantastic.
Oh, wow.
Well, in that case, do more podcasts. Come over onto the bright side. Never mind the dark
Brighton side.
Yeah. Never mind. Who would want to do a podcast? I mean, we've got to talk about Spurs in a minute. And, you know, just a little bit of ick comes into my mouth. It's...
All right, then. You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We are brought to you, as ever, in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil has given us a lovely shirt to have a look at here. Now, Marcus, you've got it there, haven't you?
I have, yes, indeed.
Can you have a quick go at describing this little number for me?
Okay, well, it's think Inter Milan, but with a slightly lighter blue than the Inter Milan shirt, in the sense of it's blue and black stripes, but wide stripes, like a Sheffield Wednesday type stripe, with a big stripe down the middle. A lovely sort of green and black collar made by Diodora. But what's interesting with this is it's got some very thin green sort of diagonal stripes across the chest, sort of from shoulder to waist. Sponsored by DHL, one of those nice Italian tight fitting ones, so no good for blokes in their 50s with beer bellies and things like that.
What are you saying here, Marcus?
Obviously designed for a proper sportsman. And the badges sort of looks like some sort of big cat, sort of Spanish flag, in the sense of red and yellow striped FCN. Where it's from, not a clue. Probably Italian, maybe, just because of the make.
Can I put you out of your misery, Marcus?
Yeah.
We've mentioned this club so many times already on this show.
Oh, I mean, how to pronounce it.
Yeah, it's Nordsjælland, which is basically Danish for North Zealand, which is the island that they're on. Yeah, so it's probably a second or third, because Phil never does home shirts. It's a second or third shirt of Nordsjælland, and I'm going to guess it's their current one.
Well, I will put you out of the vision. This is the bit where we get to fact check everything we've just talked about, actually, according to Phil and Wikipedia. So let's find out what Phil has to say about this particular jersey. And it's not current, actually.
Oh, blimey.
It is, here's your shirt of the week. It is the 2014 to 2015 away shirt of Danish Superliga side SC Nordsjælland. They are nicknamed the Wild Tigers, and they were formed in 1991 as Farum Boldklub. And in 2003, they changed their name to FC Nordsjælland. Home is a 10,300 capacity, a right to dream park in Farum, which is a town in the northeast on the island of Zealand, and is 20 kilometres north of Copenhagen. The Wild Tigers won the Superliga in 2012 and have been runners-up on two other occasions. They've also won the Danish Cup twice, and they've played two UEFA Cup campaigns and two Europa League campaigns, most recently in 2011 to 2012. The club have retired one squad member, that of Jonathan Richter, who wore the number 26 shirt between 2005 and 2009. In July 2009, whilst playing for Hivador, Jonathan was struck by lightning, which led to a cardiac arrest.
Jesus.
He was in a medically induced coma for 2 weeks, and when revived, he was in good spirits. Sadly, complications meant that the doctors had to amputate his lower leg, hence his retirement at the age of 24, and the club deciding to retire the squad number. There are a few links to the UK. Brian Oviedo joined Everton from Nordsjælland in 2012. He then moved to Sunderland in 2017, making over 120 appearances in England. Current West Ham player Mohamed Kudos began his career in Nordsjælland before time with Ajax ahead of his move to London this season. Brentford seems to have tapped into the Wild Tigers more than any other club. They've had Emiliano Marcondes, who made 81 appearances for the Bees. He's now at Bournemouth. Andrea Bjelland, he was with Nordsjælland between 2009 and 2012. He played for Brentford between 2015 and 18. And current Bees midfielder Mikael Damsgaard began his career with the Wild Tigers in 2017. But none of these teams brought an AFCON winner to the UK. Yes, indeed, our very own African hero, Simon Adingra, had his youth career with Nordsjælland via the Right to Dream Foundation
He signed as a professional in 2021 with them, playing 38 times before Tony's algorithm identified him and bought him back to the Amex in 2022. So thank you for that, Phil. Of course, you can see that in over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com. It's well worth some of your time. Okay, as a neutral, Ryman, I'm going to ask you this first because, I mean, now we've had time to dwell on it and think about it a little bit. At the end of the day, I mean, we're not neutral, but it was just a damn good game of football, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really good. I mean, Brighton were really good for large parts of the game. The defeat was devastating. It was quite something. I don't know what's happening in Brighton, but that we found quite the disturbing. But on the other hand, it's just a fact that it's punching about us. I think that Brighton was in charge of deserving posts. The challenge is still trying to finish in the top half of the Yankee and some. The subversive is challenging the better state of football. That's what is hitting them right in. They're well rested. The squad that has been built by Tony, it's not a squad that is built to be able to be competitive and to the third. So I've seen right already this season. I saw that it just the big club were lost. And I had a feeling that even though they lost, it was a blessing in disguise because the number of teams they still have to play up the road. Then Chelsea again for the league. And I felt they played really well. I'll be honest. And then I saw them again. I did talk that they should have had something.
Yeah.
It was just then. Add that to the injuries that Brighton have had. They're like, that's bad. Oh, Gillian sits water there. I saw him last season at Chelsea score an unbelievable goal.
We did too.
Yeah. I think that Emiliano Enzis has barely played this season, and Brighton has still those the amount of, like, the number of quick shots. About Deserbi's doing. I want to say one thing about Deserbi before we enter the other segment. I spoke to a player who played at my name, it's called Kendrick Bridgewater, when Deserbi was at Sassuolo. And as Barcelona came to sign Kevin Bridgewater as a backup in Suarez. And Deserbi said something to him. I said, I've watched Barcelona play. If you go there, you might play. It's a big team. You might end up winning something. If you stay here with me in Sassuolo, I'll make sure you enjoy your food. That's the same. He makes sure that it doesn't rot out. He makes sure that the squad, the players in the team, play football in a way where they enjoy it, not endure it. And that's why a lot of his players enjoy playing.
That's interesting to know. I mean, you can tell actually when you see the squad together, you can see even when they've lost and they've lost heavily, you know, they'll react appropriately, but you can still tell it's a tight-knit squad. I'm fully expecting, for the sake of argument, for Simone Adingra to get a hero's welcome when he comes home, because that's the kind of thing that they do at Brighton and Hove Albion. It's not just a case of, you know, welcoming your team back, you know, teammate back, well done, mate. They'll stick them on their, you know, metaphorically, they'll stick them on their shoulders and say, you know, this is one of our own. Simon's one of our own. And I get the feeling that is what comes down from the likes of De Zerbi. I mean, Marcus, I know you're a bit cheesed off after the game, but in the great scheme of things, this is the direction of travel is still positive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course it is. We're still in the FA Cup, you know, we're still in Europe and we're still in touching distance of qualifying for Europe again. And when players have come back, as Ryan said, you know, we've had a lot of injuries And when they start coming back, and it's just a shame Jack Hinchelwood got injured, where we're just rubbing our hands. But thankfully, Veltman came off the bench against Spurs. So thankfully, he's near, back to near fully fitness. But there's still a lot, a lot to play for, a lot to be positive about. We will probably put a good run towards the end of the season. Nice to see Villa slipping a little bit recently, because they were starting to annoy me. So it's good to actually see them sort of struggling a little bit. And obviously Chelsea have started to beat the cupcake teams now, like Crystal Palace last night. But as our good friend Andy Bass said, it's up to us to keep ahead of them, starting with the Sheffield United game. It's a big month, actually, coming up. The Cup and Europe on the horizon, and still another good two or three months of league football. We're in the business end of these competitions now.
It's funny because we've got there's European football this week. There's there's Europa League games this week, and we're not playing it, which is great. we'll have a month off, and we'll start again next month.
This is the point I was going to make about just how important. I think I said on the show in the last couple of weeks, just how important João Pedro's goal against Marseille, that 88th minute winner, was. Because it has given everyone the fillip of having that extra month to come back, without having the pressure of having to play this week. Because let's face it, if we were playing in Europe this week, we would still be hamstrung by injuries. We'd have no Jack Hinchelwood, who may or may not be out for the rest of the season. João Pedro, hopefully, we will get back sooner rather than later. Solly March looks like a hopeless case for this season. But, you might get a cameo from him at the end. But just in time for us to go to Dublin. But if it was, if it's this week, you'd think whoever it is we're going to play. And if we'd have been drawn, just imagine if we'd have been drawn against AC Milan and we're playing this week. I wouldn't fancy our chances. But with that extra month, who knows that we've got that extra time to recover, that extra part of the squad to come back. I mean, there's certain players we've lost for the rest of the season. But if that means that, and the person that Raman mentioned about 10 minutes ago, Julio Enciso, if he can come back and actually sort of set the place alight again, who knows? Like you say, Marcus, do you fancy your chances with a better end to the season than what we've had over the past, two or three months? Are you optimistic for the end of the season?
I am, actually, all told. I think that we'll probably end up qualifying for the Europa Conference this year, I think, if I'm being honest, just on the league position. No shame in that. I mean, we could win the Europa League. I mean, it's a shame Klopp's leaving, so I think Liverpool are probably going to go out to win every single trophy they can, to give him the send-off that, he arguably deserves. But you're right, there's no shame in that, especially considering the injuries that we've had. If we hadn't have had the injuries, I would have probably, like Zerbi, been aiming for higher than we finished last year and maybe even get into a final. But I just think the injuries have come at the wrong time at various points of the season.
Can I just put your comments into context here? The pair of you, I cannot believe what you've just said. There is no shame in qualifying for the Europa Conference. Hello, this is Brighton and Hove Albion. Have you forgotten?
Yeah, exactly.
This is the whole point. Raman, you wanted to make a point there.
If we qualify for the Europa Conference League every year, I would be delighted, because it means you're certainly finishing in the top 7 or 8, because I know Champions League is expanding, but it also means you're not bloody worried about relegation, which at the end of the day is what we all want to avoid. You're not even looking over your shoulder like Crystal Palace are this season, going, oh, Christ, Sheffield United have won again and they're only 6 points behind us now, blah, blah, blah. It's
lovely. We'd like to think we've left that behind, but sorry, Raman, can you appreciate our perspective here, that once upon a time, only a couple of 2 years ago, we were looking over our shoulder, forever worried about being relegation fodder, and here we are, being satisfied with playing in the Europa Conference. Do you get our perspective here?
I had so proud in 2020. I was so cross with Candy when he signed Chris Hughton. And I even said to a couple of people in the press that Charlton thought they were better than Tedeschny. And when they sat there with Schnee, it worked out. But Tony Bloom has proven to me that every appointment he's made has been an improvement to the previous ones. When he got rid of Eaton and Ron Porter, who did an amazing job, when Porter left, was it deserving? Was just kind of rolled everybody away. I just wanted to make a point about Liverpool and the Europa League. Liverpool won't try to win every trophy. But as has been proven in the Premier League, that again is even adding pressure and they could crumble. I think if Brighton have their players back on a one-off game in the Europa League final, Brighton have as good chance of being Liverpool as any other.
Well, so, yes.
Do you realize how gooey you've just made me there? Put it on a banner, Marcus. Brighton, if all the players come back, Brighton have as good a chance as Liverpool of winning the Europa League.
To be fair, as Robert said, in a one-off game, I he's right. I think I'd fancy this because we've beaten Liverpool recently, only last season, twice in the FA Cup and in the league at home, and we drew with them away. I mean, he's right. I mean, if we had all our players fit, then yeah, he's absolutely right.
Raman, could you come back every week? Because those cheerleaders go. you're flying the flag on the roof here, mate. But I mean, let's talk about the Spurs game. I mean, in the round, it was a game that could have gone either way. I mean, let's face it, the main talking point is that 96th minute winner. My first take was just how naive were we? But Marcus, it's a game that we could have won as well, isn't it?
It is a game we could have won. It's one of those games where I was angry because I don't like losing in the 96th minute. I don't think anybody likes losing in the 96th minute. Let's say, nobody's fault other than the general sort of naivety. It's just annoying that we didn't hang on for the point because I think that would have been a fair result of the game. You know, we played well in parts. Spurs, to be fair, played well in parts. Mm. We was on top. They was on top. You know, we nearly nicked it. Okay, Spurs did end up nicking it. But, you know, I'm trying to be neutral here. But, you know, I think a draw was a fair result in that game.
I happen to agree with you. Because, yeah, I mean, in the first part of the second half, Spurs, it was just one-way traffic. We couldn't put three passes together. Yeah, then they equalise. And the manager puts on all these substitutes. And I think completely undoes what Spurs are trying to do. Because after that, it's like they stop playing. Whatever it is he's trying to do, they've stopped and it's not working. And we're sort of like, you know, peppering their goal. And I do mean it because we did have two or three chances, including a couple that went, you know, and that's far wide. It is just, Marcus, just one of those bloody things, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And all he can do is just put it right against Sheffield United on... Yeah. Saturday. What is good, I think, is that Sheffield United, I think, is good. I mean, their tails are going to be up, but they've won, which kind of gets that monkey off their back. So hopefully they'll lose this week as opposed to...
Well, this is what happens when you play Luton, isn't it? You get a backlash the next week.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it could have been so different. I mean, obviously, I mean, we saw what it was like to go down so early against Luton, but, I mean, there was only 50 seconds on the clock when Welbeck nearly gave us the lead. And then, like, Mitoma could have, doubled the lead after the penalty. I mean, there was some really good stuff from us, but there was also an awful lot of mistakes which let Spurs in, and it was end-to-end stuff.
That's the nature of the way we play. I mean, it is risk and reward, and it's just one of those things that we're going to have to put up with, is that, you know, the way that De Zerbi plays. I mean, it is the case that De Zerbi will eventually sort of perform at a higher level, but he needs players who A, are technically superb, and B, will actually listen to what he says. Now, at the moment, I'm not worried about De Zerbi going for all the whole thing about Liverpool and Barcelona and all the whole thing. One, he's still going to sort out a defence, because there's no way that the hierarchy at Liverpool or Barcelona will allow him to have a defence like that. Secondly, and this is where I hearken back to what happened with Graham Potter when he moved to Chelsea. He had a whole load of ideas which, frankly, were alien to the Chelsea players, and they didn't embrace them in the way that the Brighton players embraced both Potter's and De Zerbi's ideas. you've got to have a set of players who are going to be that malleable that they will listen to what is effectively almost not a starting again, but quite a gear crunch in the way that they set up and the tactics that they have. The likes of Adam Lallana might actually well say that this is brilliant, that that you know he's learned so much even at the age of 34. But you've got to have the entire squad on side.
Yeah. Well, that's entirely it as well, because Rahman, I mean, we've seen it, what happened. I mean, using Chelsea as an example here, we've seen what happened when Potter went there and he had that dressing room to deal with, and we've seen what's happened there when, which is we're still saying is the best defensive midfield player on the planet, Moises Caicedo. What the hell have they done with him? I mean, the grass isn't always greener.
That's why I'm saying. I wanted to add that. Even again, it's credit to the job Zerbi has done this season. That he's lost Casillas, lost McAllister, lost Enciso, lost Edinburgh, lost Warbeck at some point of the season.
Matoma as well.
At some point of the season, that's literally maybe half of his team last season not being there consistently this season. And to answer your questions on Caicedo, I have doubts that he would eventually be able to perform at the level he was at Chelsea, because Chelsea is a totally different team to Brighton. And you made a point about when Potter came, I covered Chelsea from the first day to Potter's last day. And it was an absolute chaos behind the scene. Chelsea had about 10, 15 players who didn't want to be there, who knew they were not going to be there. He didn't have pre-season. And it was, listen, in the end, if Potter decided quite really well, even went for presses and all, if he spoke about the chaos of the walk, it wasn't the conditioned environment for him to get his ideas. How many players did Chelsea ship out this summer? I think about 10, 11 left the club. And they knew they weren't going to be there. So imagine speaking to players about the future when they know they're not going to be there.
Mm. It's
an absolute nightmare. And yeah, it's right at the point. It's well right. And it's no coincidence that every time you're trying to buy something significant, right?
Well, I mean, it's one thing. I mean, so every that does that mean that Adingra is going to be going to Chelsea for £250 million, and that'll be the end of his career? Because frankly, I mean, like I say, it's a black hole, isn't it? It's a whirlpit. It's a never ending. It's a bottomless pit of ludicrousness. I mean, we can say this. I mean, there's a kind of an interesting sort of dynamic that's really sparked up, certainly on social media, Marcus, about, you know, Chelsea fans almost wanting to make a rivalry with us. And our attitude is, well, you know, I can't get as angry and as animated about the Palace rivalry, but I certainly can't get animated about a Chelsea rivalry. And yet, somewhere down the line, there are far too many people out there who just think that, I don't know, we're just a little upstart that keeps sort of pinching them, or, you know, we're a little mosquito.
We just keep pinching their money.
Yeah. I mean, Marcus, yeah. I mean, I just wonder if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, to be honest with you, I just find it really funny that Chelsea, who, you know, purportedly are one of the larger big six, whatever, greedy seven or whatever Kieran Maguire would want to call them, just are struggling at the moment by their, you know, usually high standards. It's incredibly funny. And they just keep going out and buying players without any thought process. And we're grateful for the money, but no thought as to whether the manager actually wants them or not. I mean, you know, it was rumoured that, you know, Graham Potter, you know, half of these players went out and got bought for him. And I don't think he had any say in the matter at all.
I mean, you know, they're a cautionary tale now, aren't they?
Well, quite. You know, and then, of course, the old joke is, why didn't Todd just buy Brighton if he wanted?
Oh, God, no. I mean, this is the point. I think this is the point that certainly Rahman is alluding to. Oh. Is that Tony, I mean, all right, you in any form of business decision, there will be times when you get things wrong. And certainly in the 14, 15 years that Tony's been in, he's got far from every decision right. You know, he'll shake his head at Sammy Hoopier, that kind of thing. But the upshot of it is that he's also surrounding... I mean, this is what a good business acumen will say, is surround yourself with better people. And when you've got the likes of... People talked about, you know, when Dan Ashworth was here, okay, fine, he took us to the next level. But then David Weir is a different character again. Tony Bloom is clever enough to know what he doesn't know. And that's where he's got the likes of David Weir, who incidentally is certainly a rising star in the world of football administration. Paul Barber, who, like I say, there are still people out there who have the hump with him. Well, fine, get the hump, but he's working to his brief to run the football club as best he can. And he is a very well-respected football administrator. Much as you talk about Tony Bloom getting things right, I think it's more the fact that he's actually got the right team in place in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, like you said, I mean, it's being able to admit that you don't know something and have the people in place to give you that information and that know-how. And that's why everyone looked at Brighton as being the epitome of a well-run club, and long may that continue.
And I just say that going back to the Spurs game, now, we had a bit of a sort of an interesting one, in as much as one, Roberto Di Zerbi was banned from the touchline. So we got as far away from the touchline as possible and went to Italy to have some dental surgery. Is that a euphemism? I hope it isn't, that he genuinely has. And I'm, because we had...
Invasive dental surgery.
Invasive dental. Oh, God, I really don't... Hang on, does that mean he goes up through the back? No, I don't want to know. But he was still in contact with the bench during the Spurs game, and apparently the substitutions were his idea. And I've just got this thing in mind about the way that he's actually going to say it is... hang on, I've got another tooth here. Hang on.
All I'm going to say is it's just a shame that Fatty didn't take that chance later on, because, you know, that would have put a veneer on the performance.
No.
Is there a pun there?
Yes, it's a pun. Dear, Fatty probably, if he'd had more game time, probably would have bagged it. It's one of those things.
I actually thought it was Welbeck that took the chance at the time, because they're actually stood in front of each other. But it was like, I think they got in each other's way a little bit. But it was...
The thing about Fatty is that, and I'm hoping that they take it carefully, is that, you know, they do have to have half an eye on Europe. And now, Joao Pedro may or may not be back for the European game, or games, but Fatty has done very, very well in the European games. Adingra, now the interesting point is that before he got injured, and in fact before he went off to AFCON, I think that the wisdom amongst the Brighton fans was that he got off his game a little bit. That, you know, he looked tired, he was playing every game, and he had to basically fill out the role of about three different wingers. And he looked a bit knackered. And so ironically, Marcus, you know, the injury seems to have done in the world of good. So to come back, you know, in the Africa Cup of Nations, the way he did is actually, you know, we're back to the sort of like the hopeful positivism that we're talking about for the end of the season.
Yeah, and hopefully he'll put a good run in, because, you know, at the beginning of the season he was excellent, but I think he just ran out of puff a bit like Matoma did. You know, it was just week in, week out. You know, they weren't getting a break, but then we didn't really have players to be able to come in and do that. But, you know, we've had to, as Rahman said, we've had to sort of cope without them for periods of the season now. So
losing Solly March, you know, as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we should be able to sort of rotate a bit more, I think, is probably, you know, what I'm looking at.
That's the point, is if you've got, for instance, you've got Mitoma, you've got March, you've got Adingra, and maybe another wide player, you know full well, at least Deserbi or Enciso, you'll know. I'm like with Buonanotti, I don't see Enciso as a wide player, but my point would be is, if you know those players are all available, it's not about who do you play. It's more about knowing full well that you can have Adingra going absolutely ballistic or Solly March going absolutely mad for 60 minutes, knowing full well they're not going to be out there for 90 minutes. So they can absolutely go. But if they're going to play in the way that they do for 90 minutes, it's going to kill them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but add to that as well, we've got Barco coming into the equation in the next...
Well, slow down. Let him slow down. Let him get, you know, acclimatized.
I don't expect him to come into the team straight away at all. You know, I mean, normally when we sign a young player like that, they would be farmed out to Belgium or somewhere. But I mean, I don't know if anyone saw it, but the assist for the win of Argentina in the week in their Olympic qualifier was absolutely exquisite.
Well, it's not even that so much. It was the last minute thing. I think it was the fifth minute of injury time. Argentina have got a corner. They play a short one. Barco's teammate, Nutmeg's a Brazilian player, and Barco is basically out by the touchline and probably no more than about 10 yards away from the goal line, and absolutely leathers a shot, which the keeper does a brilliant save for. This was on target. If the keeper hadn't touched it, we're talking worldy into where the spiders live. And this is him mucking about in the 95th minute. So if you think, actually, right, game management is 1-1, let's, you know, take it easy. Valentin Barco is going to take an awful lot of telling not to do that.
He's come to the right place.
Yeah, because, which, you know, it gives the point that, you know, the defeat against Spurs was frustrating. They just don't have this mindset, Marcus, of, right, a draw's good enough. I mean, don't get me wrong. We you know, beating Spurs is delicious. It's sexy. It's funny. And yet, you know, this is what happens, the whole risk and reward attitude, isn't it? That in going for the win, you get the defeat. And these are the sort of like the...
It sounds like a very bizarre thing to say, but it is rare to have a game where both sides are actually trying to win it. Right up until the last minute, it was
well, in the Premier League, certainly, yeah,
yeah.
It was like no one. Spurs weren't settling for a point. We weren't settling for a point. We were both going for it, and that's why we love this game. And you don't have to play badly to lose a game. You can play brilliantly and still lose. And oddly I don't think we played brilliantly at the weekend. I thought we played well, but both teams were making mistakes all over the pitch, and it was brilliant. But one player that did come out of it, which we couldn't. I sat next to Al Marcus, and we couldn't quite work out whether Jean-Paul Van Hecke was playing in defence or up front, because
he was absolutely
everywhere. But he was a colossus,
and he's only getting better and better. And you know, like I said in a previous show, you know, his coming of age moment was the Man City at home game last season, where you know, he didn't let Haaland out of his sight, basically, and Haaland was getting very annoyed at the attention that JP was paying him, which is a compliment to JP, because you know, not many centre backs get the better of Haaland, and certainly not with the referee decisions that he gets. But that's another story. You know, it was good to see. So yeah, Addy's only getting better and better, and you know, the future's in safe hands. And he's obviously overtaken Webster now in the pecking order, because Webster, you know, arguably has lost a little bit of form, but also is made of balsa wood, which is also not helping.
Yeah. And a bit of confidence as well. It's probably more
important. Because, you know, at one point, you know, when he was good, he was really good, and people were saying he was knocking on the door for England, and sadly gets injured, which, you know, maybe he hasn't quite, you know, well, he certainly hasn't rediscovered that form that was, you know, put him in the chat for an England spot, which is a shame. But, you know, he's now, what, probably fourth choice centre-back. You know, you probably played Veltman at centre back before Webster, if
Igor as well,
or Lampard's fit or whatever. You know, and like you say, there's Igor. Anyway,
well, that is all we've got time for. So, thank you so much to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Rahman Osman. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course, on our podcast, and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. See you all again next week. Thanks for listening. Cheers. Bye.
She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, "Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you. Longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.